Hello, and welcome to Why Wars Happened, a weekly history podcast where we talk about what led to war in history. I'm your host, Emily Ross, and today we're going to be discussing the things that led to the American Revolution, with a focus on Virginia this season. Okay, so where we left off in the last episode was that the man who would lead the coming rebellion had arrived in Virginia. He was a distant relative of Governor Berkeley's, and he sat as a member in the assembly, where he had been chosen by the governor himself as a member of the governor's council. His name was Nathaniel Bacon. Bacon criticized the government from time to time about its high taxes, its members who didn't do their jobs very well, and about how the governor controlled everything, basically leaving the people without a real voice in their government. If the tensions between the colonists and the government weren't enough to kick off a rebellion, then maybe sprinkling a little bit of an omen in there would help. In the summer of the year before the rebellion, a great comet streaked through the sky for a week, leaving a spooky horsetail behind it. Then, tens of thousands of pigeons blotted out the sky as far as the eye could see. Pigeons everywhere! They swept into the trees, and wherever they sat, tree limbs would break and crash to the ground. That's enough to freak anyone out and put people on edge. But there was more. Along with the comet trailing through the sky and the clouds of endless pigeons, millions of bugs known as cicadas, who, as those in the South will know, are extremely loud, swarmed over the grasses and trees of Virginia. They ate everything in their path and then simply disappeared. Did I mention the word spooky or omen or disgusting yet? The strange thing about all of this, the thing that really spooked people out, was that the last time this had happened, the natives had massacred entire villages and towns of people in 1644. It was, indeed, an omen. And don't forget the floods and the massive hurricane that came just a year or so before this. It's enough to make anyone believe the world was coming to an end, or that something terrible was about to happen. And happen, it did. One Sunday morning during that same summer, a group of people were headed to church. They passed a house and stopped in shock at what they saw on the doorstep. A man, bloodied and near death, lay across the threshold. A native man lay just outside the house, dead on the ground, with wounds from a hatchet to his head and to his arms. They ran to the man at the doorstep to see if there was anything they could do to save him. He also had wounds from a hatchet to his head and to his arms. He was too far gone for anyone to save, so they asked him who had done this to him. Just before he died, he breathed the name Doegs. Doegs. The Doegs were a native tribe that lived nearby, so everyone knew what he meant. And just then, a little boy came up from underneath a bed inside the house where he had been hiding during the massacre. The people asked him what had happened, and the boy confirmed that it was the natives who had come to their house and attacked them. Up until this point, Virginia had been at peace with the natives for many years. There had been multiple massacres committed by the natives before this, one in 1622 and one in 1644. Both came as a surprise to the Virginians, who had lived in peace with the natives for over a decade each time. Each time they had literally welcomed the natives into their homes. Some of the natives had even been eating breakfast at the colonists' table when they suddenly rose to attack and butcher entire families, including infants. This memory still lived vibrantly in the minds of the Virginians. It wasn't that long ago. Many of the colonists themselves had lived through it. Others had parents and grandparents who had lived through it. This was only 35 years after the last massacre. If we're to look at why it happened, we need only to look at the relationship between Maryland, which is right above Virginia, and some of their own natives who moved closer to Virginia. There was a tribe called the Susquehannock. The Susquehannock lived in Maryland for a very long time, and they were at war for a very long time with the colonists in Maryland and with the Iroquois. The Iroquois were going crazy on the Susquehannock, totally decimating them, and the Susquehannock were so desperate that they decided to make peace with the Maryland colonists in order to make it so they didn't have to worry about the colonists in Maryland attacking them anymore. Part of this agreement to make peace was that the Susquehannock would give up claims to some of the land in Maryland. The Susquehannock weren't teaming up with the colonists just yet. They were only making it so that the colonists would stop attacking them. This made it so they could focus on fighting the Iroquois. But eventually, the Susquehannock suffered a major attack from another tribe, and now they wanted the colonists in Maryland to fight by their side and beat the tribe's enemies. Maryland agreed to fight alongside the Susquehannock. This agreement was great for both the Susquehannock and Maryland. However, the colonists in Maryland also made an agreement with some of the enemies of the Susquehannock. Seriously, guys, that's messed up. The enemy tribe attacked the Susquehannock and defeated them badly. The Susquehannock fled their villages. Maryland wanted them to settle in one spot, and the Susquehannock wanted to settle somewhere else, closer to Virginia, 40 miles closer to Virginia, right on the Potomac River. This is where the whole trouble with the Doeg started. The Doeg tribe actually lived with the Susquehannock here in this spot by Virginia. Before this, the Doegs had committed a bunch of murders in Virginia and had been pushed out of the areas where the colonists lived and driven to the same spot that the Susquehannock now lived. And this is where the two tribes lived together. So, for all appearances, they were the same tribe. This is where it gets a little dicey. The Susquehannock were safe from the slaughters of their enemy tribes, but they had no space to plant corn or other food. The land around the place they chose was now owned by the colonists. The Susquehannock could catch fish, but this wasn't enough to keep the tribe alive. So they began going onto land owned by the colonists and stealing the colonists' food. They also killed the colonists' dogs, cattle, and other animals. This became a known thing to the colonists in the area. It hadn't been that long before this that the English colonists themselves arrived to Virginia and went out on a Powhatan land to hunt, and the natives there had killed them for it. It was completely understandable that the Susquehannock would go onto English land to hunt. However, instead of just stealing food and killing animals to survive, the raids on English land eventually escalated into murders of English people. Like the stealing of food, the murders committed by the Susquehannock became a known thing to the people in the area as well. So, while the man who had been murdered on his doorstep said that it was the Doegs who had murdered him, it's possible that it was the Doegs, and it's also possible that he may have been mistaken and it was the Susquehannock. Either way, it was on. The colonists were going to retaliate. The people were frightened. Who knows when the next attack could occur? They had to protect themselves. Something had to be done. The colonists immediately gathered arms and set out to find and kill the attackers. A group of 36 men came together, and like something out of an epic poem, they crossed the river into Maryland at dawn. They plunged into the woods, pursuing the tracks of the Doegs. At one point, they came across a trail that split in two directions. So, half of the group went one way, and the other half went the other way. As fate would have it, both halves found a cabin full of natives. One half found a cabin full of the Doegs they were looking for. The other half found a cabin full of Susquehannock. The group who found the Susquehannock believed that these were the Doegs. So we're going to start with the group that found the Doegs. The group that had found the Doegs made themselves known to those inside. When the king of the Doegs came out, he seemed frightened and like he wanted to run. But the leader of the group grabbed him by the hair and demanded that he deliver the people in his tribe who had committed the murder of the man found on his doorstep. The Doeg king claimed that he had no idea what the colonists were talking about. Then he slipped loose from the hold on his hair. Before he could get far, the leader of the colonist group shot the king dead. Not only was this unjust, it was a terrible mistake. The Doegs inside the cabin immediately opened fire on the colonists. The colonists returned fire and killed 10 of them. All of these gunshots happened to awake the Susquehannocks in the cabin that was surrounded by the other half of the group. The Susquehannock, however, didn't fire on the colonists. Instead, they ran, and the colonists fired on them as they fled. This group killed 14 of the Susquehannock. While the Susquehannock had been committing murders and robbery against the colonists all along, the colonists didn't know if those inside the cabin had ever been guilty of it. The colonists had murdered them instead of finding out if they had been guilty. It's entirely possible that they were as innocent as the colonists who had been murdered. Maybe they were guilty. Either way, it was unjust, and it was a huge mistake. In fact, the leader of this group quickly realized that the cabin was full of Susquehannock and not Doeg. He immediately shouted to his men, "For the Lord's sake, shoot no more. These are our friends, the Susquehannock." But it was too late. 14 of them had been shot. In retaliation, the Susquehannock began a series of murderous raids in Virginia and in Maryland. So, Virginia and Maryland joined together to fight the Susquehannock. Together, they went after the tribe with nearly 1,000 men, and they found them on a patch of land in a swamp. The Susquehannock had no chance of beating the colonists in open battle, so they withdrew to their village and were protected by a special kind of wall. The Marylanders themselves had taught the Susquehannock how to strengthen their village against attack, and it was both Maryland and Virginia who had given the Susquehannock guns. If they had not given them guns or taught them how to protect their village, it would have been very easy to overtake them. But not now. The colonists had no equipment that could knock down or break the walls. And remember, they were in a giant swamp. The village was built on a small patch of land, but the ground around it sank when stepped on. It was impossible to dig a trench or move across it to get the men close enough to attack the walls. So the colonists decided that the only real way to get to the Susquehannock would be to wait and starve them out. They also set up men around the river outside the swamp so that the natives couldn't escape that way. However, one of the leaders among the colonists got an idea. He invited the leaders inside the protected village to come out for a parley, which is a chat that's normally protected under the rules of war. The native leaders came out where the man who invited them accused them of some of the recent murders committed in Maryland. The native leaders claimed that it wasn't them, it was another tribe, the Senecas, who had committed the murders. This was an obvious lie. The Susquehannock themselves, right in front of the colonists here, were wearing the clothes of those who had been murdered. On top of that, their canoes had been seen loaded with beef from freshly killed cows. They were guilty. One of the native leaders realized that they'd been caught, so he was like, "Hey, here's a medal and a piece of paper from that guy, Lord Baltimore, who owns Maryland. The paper and the medal from him say that we're under his protection, so you can't really do anything to us." Despite this, and despite the fact that the native leaders had come out from their protected village to parley and were therefore under parley protection, the leader of the colonists who had invited them out ordered his men to murder the native leaders. And they did. The natives inside the village immediately responded to this barbaric act by firing on the colonists. They inflicted enough damage on the colonists that they were able to run out and grab horses, which they took inside the village and used as food. The colonists fired back, and the natives fired back again, and the whole thing lasted around 7 weeks. Finally, after those 7 weeks, in the middle of the night, the natives burst from the village in a surprise attack. They killed many of the colonists while they slept and escaped into the dark with their women and children. When word reached Governor Berkeley that the Maryland leader had invited the natives to parley and then had murdered them, he was enraged. The man who had ordered the native leaders to be murdered was removed from Maryland's military, fined, and imprisoned. And Governor Berkeley was right to be furious. Despite the fact that the colonists responsible for this event had been punished, the damage was already done. That's all for today. Thanks for tuning in. Join us next week when we discuss how the people pleaded with Governor Berkeley for permission to go and hunt down those who continued the attacks, and how the governor's refusal to allow this resulted in a rebellion. Subscribe so you don't miss the next episode, and comment your thoughts on this episode below. See you next time on Why Wars Happened.